Hi, everyone. Welcome to Emergent Leadership, where we connect with passionate emergency medical leaders that just have to share their stories, perspectives, and most importantly, lessons learned. The need is urgent, the events are critical, and the you of tomorrow is just an episode away. My name is Brett Lyle, and this is Emergent Leadership. Welcome to another episode of Emergent Leadership. I'm fortunate enough to be with Danielle Robertson-Rath today, caffeine scientist, presenter, and speaker. Thanks for being with me today, Danielle.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. So this is something that I am super passionate about. Anybody follows my channel, you know I am always on the beverage train with my coffees and all sorts of caffeine. So I know it's more than about that, but that's where we kind of came in contact, Danielle, was just through LinkedIn, seeing that you're interested in talking about caffeine and caffeine related to burnout, which is a really interesting combination to me. So I'm excited to talk to you today about all of those things. So Danielle, can you tell for those of the listeners who don't know you, just a little bit about yourself, kind of where you come from, what you do, and how you got into the conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a food scientist and a biochemist by training. I've been in the food industry for about 10 years, from working behind the bar, working vampire shifts, to working quality assurance on the manufacturing floor, to working in food product development, corporate R&D. So I've been in the food industry for about a decade, but I've been studying caffeine and energy drinks for about twice that time. Energy drinks came out right when I was studying biochemistry in college. And as someone that was going to school full-time that had two part-time jobs, I constantly needed caffeine to help me juggle everything.
But
I was always disappointed with the just get more sleep, you know, or drink less caffeine recommendations at that time. So, I mean, really I've been fascinated in this space between how to avoid burnout and how to consume caffeine responsibly. So that's kind of how I got started. It was just like, getting my biochemistry degree at the right time and then just having that scientific fascination with how caffeine works in your body and how it might not be enough to counteract the fatigue that you feel emotionally or physically.
Right. Sounds like the short answer is because you were living it.
Yep, pretty much.
So biochemistry. So were you initially wanting to go into med school, or where does biochemistry come from? That interest there? That's a really specific, I would argue, you know, a trade, expertise. And how do you get into that?
So I did gymnastics 20 hours a week when I was in high school, and I loved the study of nutrition. You know, what do I need to eat as a competitive gymnast to make sure that I'm performing at my peak? But I also loved chemistry in high school. And so kind of studying the area where nutrition and chemistry overlap, that brought me to study biochemistry, specifically metabolic biochemistry. So it's not just nutrition, but it's like what's happening inside your body from a chemical reaction standpoint when you're eating food or when you're drinking water, when you're not drinking enough water. That's kind of how I got into biochemistry.
There's so many pieces. And I know a lot of our listeners are clinical, our EMTs, paramedics, critical care, nurses, you know, all the way through. And so I'm sure they're really appreciating that you're talking about the science behind it, which I think is the most fascinating. I know there are people out there that talk about caffeine, and it seems like every time you turn around, Danielle, someone's saying, oh, well, coffee is good for you now, as long as it's black, or it's bad for you because it makes your, you know, if you have any heart challenges or blood pressure issues, it's good for this, but bad for this. And there's a lot of seemingly misinformation. As someone who's not a full-time consumer of the research, I'm excited to learn from you. You know, let's land our plane. Tell me, is it good? Is it bad? And meanwhile, I'm going to sip my coffee. But I'm really pumped to get into that with you and some of the details. But so thanks for being here with me today. And I'm glad that we got connected. So you got into biochemistry. You're learning about the science behind how things affect your body. And how does that become a career path for you? I mean, you graduate from college and you're probably around my age-ish. I know it was a challenging time to graduate from college and, you know, right after the Great Recession. So it's been named around that space. And there's been a lot of shifts in the food and beverage industry. How did you get into food and beverage from college? Was that an obvious track?
For me, it was. So studying biochemistry as an undergrad, I was more and more fascinated with biochemistry and how our body is turning the foods we eat into biochemical energy, not to be confused with like perceived energy, like how energized you feel or stimulation.
Right.
And so I wanted to get into that further. And so that led me to go into a food science master's program with UC Davis. And that's really where I picked up my peak nerdiness in terms of like food science and biochemistry, everything from, you know, how does the way a food is manufactured change its nutritional quality, things like that. And so that just kind of set me on this path of taking my biochemistry fascination one step further into like the manufacturing. And that's kind of what led me to get a job. As you mentioned, during the Great Recession, I could not get a job anywhere. Like here I am with a shiny new master's degree, right? And no one could hire me. So that's how I ended up working in a bar and getting intimately familiar with caffeine and burnout, like how people that are working, you know, getting off their shifts at like 3 a.m., how are they coping with that delay in sleep patterns? How are they coping with the energy and with the burnout? So that fascination has always just been part of who I am and the jobs that I've had at that time.
That's like the backwards joke. Like you told the butt of the joke before the start. It's like, and that's how I ended up working at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, unrelated or very related to caffeine, studying too much and trying to understand my body. That's why I worked at the bar.
Yep.
You know, it's the path of so many college students. I waited tables myself for about a semester long enough to realize that was not my calling. So it's interesting how our paths really drive us and how we drive our paths and our, you know, where those two things kind of meet in the middle. But it sounds like you've had some good synergy from your formal education all the way through your career and still do today. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely shouting from the rooftops, Danielle, and I don't know what you're shouting about. So we're going to dive into that. But so much so that you wrote a book. When did you write this book? And what motivated you as a fellow writer? Man, tell me about that process.
So what was really fascinating to me and what really drove me to write a book. So I've actually written two books. The very first one I wrote from undergrad through grad school, all the way through my time at the bar. It took 10 years to like actually get this book published.
Yes.
That first book is called Are You a Monster or a Rockstar? A Guide to Energy Drinks. And that was me putting everything I had learned as a biochemistry student, as a food scientist student, as a bartender, everything I learned in terms of like what makes a caffeinated beverage safe or unsafe. What about all the ingredients? What do they do? Do they do anything? Like how much is the right dosage?
Right.
So that's the first book. And that's very, very focused on the science behind energy drinks. As a mom of two toddlers, I became more fascinated with burnout in general. So less about the specifics of energy drinks and more about caffeine and burnout in general. And while I was pregnant with my second child, I wrote this book, How to Get Shh Done When You Feel Like Shh. And that's basically, I mean,
that's the mom bleep.
That's the mom bleep. Yes. I mean, SH asterisk T, you know, whatever.
Right.
But I mean, essentially as a mom of a toddler, like there are times when your kid is crying and you might feel sleep deprived, stressed out. You might feel your worst, but you still have to get shit done. So like, how do you do that? How do you get things done when you feel like poop? How do you get shit done when you feel like shit?
Right.
And so that's how the title came to be.
The book. Yeah.
Hence the book. Yes.
Yeah.
And so that book talks more about like how to manage every level of fatigue. And that's a system that I've really honed over the last 20 years is, you know, you might be exhausted, but I think your level of exhaustion has a different tier. There might be times when you're exhausted because you're bored or you're distracted, you're dehydrated. There might be times that you're like zombie level exhausted and no amount of caffeine will save you because you're just completely burned out, completely sleep deprived. And so identifying those five levels of fatigue has really helped me myself, you know, get things done as a mom with two kids, or, you know, as somebody that's juggling a 9-to-5 and like my side hustle, right? So that's the biggest thing that I've learned. And that's the biggest thing I like to promote is these five levels of fatigue. How can you identify your level of fatigue? And then how do you know what to do at that level so that you have a proportionate response, something that's more effective?
Right. Gosh, how fascinating. So your first book was really more the science behind the energy drinks. And I love that title, by the way. So are you a rock star or a monster? Mm-hmm. Tell me the formal title one more time for anybody who wants to go grab it.
So I'm big into puns, right? So it's, Are You a Monster or a Rock Star? A Guide to Energy Drinks.
By Daniel Robinson Rath. So that one's really more scientific about the caffeine in an energy drink. So when I talk about caffeine, I'm a coffee chick. I don't want anything to do with energy drinks. That's just me personally. And I know people will die on that hill through and through. But I'm a coffee person. So I'm curious to know, Danielle, in your research, is there a difference in the way that caffeine works with your body if it's coffee or an energy drink or some other source of caffeine, like a green tea has caffeine in it? And you mentioned hot chocolate one day, and I was floored. Yeah. Like, oh, don't take my hot chocolate. Winter treat. Yeah. Is there a difference in the way that your body responds to caffeine if it's delivered through those different beverages?
Nope, there is no difference. There is no difference. Caffeine is caffeine is caffeine, whether it's coming from Coca-Cola or your dark chocolate, hot chocolate, or your pre-exercise supplement or coffee or tea or an energy drink. Like, the molecule caffeine itself will affect you the same way. The only thing that changes is how you consume it. So I call these consumption specifics in my first book. Like, for example, if you take a caffeine pill, like, you've swallowed it, it's all gone. So if it's too much caffeine for you, it's too late. You've had the whole thing, as opposed to if you have this giant coffee, right? Like a venti coffee from Starbucks, you might not consume that whole dosage because it takes you 20 minutes to get through the whole thing. So you might feel those jitters and end up throwing out the rest of the coffee before you consume it. You can't do that with energy shots or caffeine pills. So that's really the only difference in terms of like how the format of the caffeine might affect you differently, but the molecule itself will affect you the same regardless of where it comes from.
So I'm going to ask the question I know everybody wants to know. What's the right dosage? How many cups is the right number of cups? Let's talk about the beverage consumption.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that. So a healthy adult can have up to 400 milligrams a day. A standard, quote unquote, standard cup of coffee contains 100 milligrams.
My like 32 ounce mug over here?
It's more of an 8 ounce mug.
It's right? Only eight. It's my Nespresso pod. I like my portions, but so 400 milligrams a day, however you consume that. So if that's one cup total. Espresso, if it's an energy drink at lunch. So I'm going to speak specifically to our EMS friends who are on the road in the field all the time. Mm-hmm. And I know, obviously, you know, not asking you to support a specific brand or another, but in your research that's published, have you found one that maybe you do like think like this is a good, how am I supposed to ask this? I guess what I'm trying to ask is like, you know, if there's one that's kind of the right amount of caffeine to liquid.
So you do want to be very careful to not have more than 200 milligrams at a time. Mm-hmm. You can have 400 per day if you're a healthy adult, but it's not recommended to have more than 200 milligrams at a time, because that's when you start experiencing some of those side effects that make all the scary news headlines, like energy drinks, blood pressure, you know, blood vessels, all of that, all of those side effects that are usually attributed to energy drinks. That happens with all caffeine if you consume more than 200 milligrams at a time.
Right.
So be careful about that. Be careful about having very strong coffees. Be careful about having energy drinks that have more than 200 milligrams per container, because that's when you start to get some of those side effects.
Oh, I have a story I have to share. When I was in high school, I worked at an all women's gym. It was close enough to my high school that I could walk before and after school. And worked in the fitness world, and we had a little refrigerator with all these energy drinks, and there was an energy drink. So this was circa 2004, maybe three. Mm-hmm. And there was one specific energy drink that the portion size was, the full bottle. And so you drink the full bottle and not realize, or maybe I'm saying that backwards, but anyway, I chugged this thing before I got on the elliptical and I was just going. I was like at 215 and my heart rate skyrocketed.
Yep.
It scared me, Danielle. And at this point, I think I was probably 16. And I was used to, rigorous exercise. I was in cross country. I was used to going, but it scared me. My heart, I felt like, was going to jump out of my body, as best as I could explain it. Of course, that since has been pulled from the market. So there's good news that they recognize some of that stuff early on. Because food marketing is also a huge, and we can do a whole podcast on that, on how things are presented. And so it's so important to educate yourself and know, to your point, obviously you wrote a book about it, not just how and what caffeine does to you in your body, but what it does to you in your body and how you respond.
Exactly.
Have you seen, Danielle, that there are big variances from one person to another and how caffeine can hit them, or even a perception of how caffeine can hit them?
Yes, absolutely. So let me talk about caffeine tolerance and sensitivity first. So people that are working night shift or the first responders, their lifestyle is not very conducive to getting a regular amount of sleep. And so they often compensate with having a lot of caffeine. So those types of people and those types of occupations typically build up a caffeine tolerance where they're so used to having it, it takes more to get the same type of stimulation.
Okay.
And so I've noticed that people that are in those types of occupations tend to consume more than this 400 milligram limit, which is one of the reasons I have worked with them. So I've enjoyed working with them so well in the past is, helping them get down to that 400, but it's usually based on your occupation. You can build up this tolerance just because your schedule is so hectic.
Right.
So that's caffeine. Exactly. Your lifestyle. So caffeine tolerance is something that fluctuates as you drink more and more caffeine, or if you don't drink any caffeine, your tolerance will go down.
Wow.
Your genetic sensitivity does not change at all.
Okay.
So if you are sensitive to caffeine, you will always be sensitive to caffeine. Your tolerance is kind of like a fine-tuned scope that might raise how much caffeine you can handle, but your sensitivity is kind of like your baseline.
Right.
So there are some people that just aren't genetically sensitive. They can have 12 cups of coffee and be completely fine because
right.
their enzymes in their body are just so darn efficient. They just, can take care of that caffeine, no problem.
Right.
So it's really fascinating to see how much caffeine people consume and how much that can be modulated by the other ways you can use to combat fatigue and burnout, and how much is based on their sensitivity and can't be changed or can't, be adjusted that much.
Sure. I hate to keep sharing stories, but I like stories. So I have friends who can drink a cup of coffee. I have a lot of friends that were from Europe in college and in the Middle East and really from all over. And one of my friends from Cyprus, he would take shots of espresso and then go take a nap. What?
Yep.
Just that, I guess it's consumption is part of their culture. Coffee is definitely part of our culture here in the US, but all across the world. You go to Turkey, you're going to get a different coffee than if you go to, Turkey or Greece or the Mediterranean, you're going to get a different coffee than if you go to South America. It's different than a Puerto Rico. If you go to Cuba, it's different than, all these different places, but beverages and caffeine are definitely part of the culture. Did you any work around the different types of caffeine and cultures, or is that something that's interesting to you?
Absolutely, to both questions. So one of the reasons I find that caffeinated beverages, like an energy drink form, can be useful is that you know how much caffeine is in there. Whereas a coffee, even if you get the same exact coffee from the same exact coffee shop, the amount of caffeine in there might fluctuate day to day to day. And that's just getting the same coffee from the same coffee shop. If you go and, get a different cup of coffee from a different country, that caffeine content is going to vary wildly. So if you're someone that's trying to get more sleep or trying to wean your caffeine. You know, maybe you're drinking like a gram and a half a day because you've built your tolerance, you know, for 30 years working in EMS. You know, you can't figure out how to cut back if you don't know how much you're consuming. So I really like this website called caffeineinformer.com. Caffeine Informer has this huge database of caffeine contents in coffees, teas, medication, food, and of course, energy drinks. So they even have some information about how much coffee is quote unquote standard based on the different regions of the world. So that's been really helpful. And just bringing attention to the different people I work with, like, do you actually know how much caffeine you're getting? That's the very first step. That's, you know, in terms of improving your stress level, in terms of improving your sleep deprivation, step number one is knowing how much caffeine you're getting. And that's not easy if you're getting it from something like coffee.
Right. Interesting. So you're telling me that if I go to Starbucks is a reasonable example, they mm-hmm. source from all over the world. Mm-hmm. If I go to Starbucks and I get the Miranda blend, and I know it comes from the same lot in the same country in the same kind of, you know, I don't know what the word is for like their lot of beans, their harvest. Mm-hmm. It could have a different level of caffeine from one cup to the next from the same lot.
Absolutely. Yep.
And what is that based on, Danielle?
Well, I mean, think about like the bananas that you see at the store. Like they're probably coming from the same harvest, the same country, the same farmer, but like the size of the bananas, how quickly they mold, like it's all just Mother Nature going crazy. And so coffee's the same way, you know, it's a natural product and the soil's going to do what the soil's going to do. So it's not easy to predict
how it's going to come out. I think that needs to be the title of your next book. The soil's going to do what the soil's going to do. Right? I love that. Yeah, that's neat. So let's talk about the thing that is so prevalent in EMS, is so mm-hmm. prevalent in, you know, emergency medical services, pre-hospital, hospital, healthcare. Frankly, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people right now, it's not even EMS specific, people that are working from home and that transition yep. from going to an office and commuting versus having to manage your life from your living room or yep. a makeshift office. Let's talk about that. How do you define burnout? How do you define fatigue? How do I know when this is something? If I'm listening right now, how do I go, okay, all right, that's my cue. Here's my sign. I need to pay attention. Mm-hmm. How do you know you should start kind of thinking about this stuff and working on that? And then I'd love to dive in, if you're comfortable with it, to a little bit of what are those levels of fatigue? And when do you call fatigue burnout? Or am I thinking about that right?
No, you are thinking about that correctly. So I recently met someone that has proposed a new definition for burnout, but I haven't read her paper yet. So I'm going to stick with the one that I've been using, which may or may not be the best model. But the way that I've been taught to identify burnout is it's characterized by three things. One is emotional exhaustion. One is an overwhelming sense of cynicism, like nothing I do matters. And then the third thing is reduced professional efficacy. So how well you think you do your job and your job performance and also your job effectiveness. So that's the three ways to identify burnout is the emotional exhaustion, the cynicism, and then the professional efficacy. How much do you care about your job and how good are you at your job?
Man, I am just sitting here thinking, managing a team, all of these leaders in this industry who struggle mm-hmm. because burnout's a big issue and turnover is expensive. Mm-hmm. And when you have burnout of employees and you have fatigue, I think the right thing to do, and no one will disagree with me, but the right thing to do is to help. Problem is, how do you help? We've got to staff trucks. We've got to put shifts on the road. We've got mm-hmm. to do this. So that challenge that leaders have is I have logistics needs. And mm-hmm. how can I meet my logistics needs, but also support my employee base and the humans behind mm-hmm. their ID numbers, right? How do I do that? Mm-hmm. And so this is a really great space. And I'm so glad to have you to talk about this. But as a leader, what do you mm-hmm. do with that information? How do you go to somebody and say, okay, you're a little emotional, a little cynical, you might be burned out, but you know, messaging around that. gosh, I don't even know that I have a specific takeaway other than that's really powerful to be able to recognize that, maybe even in someone who doesn't recognize it in themselves, to offer mm-hmm. them that second level of grace to say, okay, they're not just a crabby old veteran employee. Yeah. They are truly, by scientific definition, at burnout. And so yes. Danielle, as a leader, how do I help them? What do I do with that information?
So there's four different ways to kind of help someone with their level of burnout. There's the physical energy management, which is usually like exercise, working out, the physical stuff like diet and exercise. Sure. There's the emotional energy management, which is more around like, do you feel like you have a support network? If you, dear EMS person, are having a crappy day, is there someone you can talk to, whether it's your partner or your spouse or your boss? Like, right. Is there someone that you can relate to and kind of like relieve some of this burden? Because keeping some of the dark things that you see on your job on a daily basis inside without any outlet, that can definitely contribute to that escalating burnout. So having those emotional energy management systems is really helpful. Just having like empathy from a boss
yeah.
can be a huge help when you're feeling burned out. The third thing is the mental energy management. And that gets into more like mindset, meditation, mindfulness, things of that nature. And then there's spiritual energy management. So do you feel like your work is serving a higher purpose? Do you feel like there's a greater plan? Like some people are able to overcome their burnout by getting more spiritual and by really like putting grace in the hands of whoever you believe is up there. So there's four different ways to try and combat the burnout. The one that I like the most is more of the emotional energy management. So I've got this five levels of fatigue system, right? Which you asked about earlier. And I think the biggest strength of this system is that it's kind of a scale. Like if you think of all of the different recommendations out there in terms of stress management, right? There's Mel Robbins' 5-second rule. There's, you know, all this type of advice that might work for somebody that's at a particular level of fatigue, but it might not work for another level. So as you are a leader in your company, just being able to identify your own personal level of fatigue and then helping your team learn how to identify their own levels of fatigue, you can start building systems around that recognition. For sure. example, if 90% of your team is at fatigue level 4, then you know you might need to change something, or maybe you can swap shifts between somebody that's at a level 2 and somebody that's at a level 4. Sure. You can build different systems, different tiny things in place without having to hire new people or, you know, completely overhaul your health and benefits program. It's the little stuff that can make the biggest difference. And the very, very first step is identifying that level of fatigue so that then you can find a proportionate response to that level.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. So do people, if I'm a leader and I'm saying, I think this is an issue, I'm hearing you, Danielle, and I've got fatigue problems through and through, and I want to solve the world's problems. How do I identify that? Is that a protocol? Is that a screening? Do you have a test? How do I really identify my workforce and where their general level of fatigue is? Or is that even feasible?
It's definitely feasible. The very first place to start would be to teach your team how to identify the five levels of fatigue, and then to identify as a team, okay, what should somebody do if they're at fatigue level 2, fatigue level 3? And there might be some things that are more reasonable within your specific workplace than somewhere else. So in my book, How to Get Shit Done When You Feel Like Shit, I've got different recommendations for what someone should do if they're at fatigue level 2. For example, there's something called a fake fight. A fake fight is not something that's going to get you fired or punched in the face. A fake fight is like, is it coupon or coupon, envelope or envelope, right?
Water I think fountain you're very clear answers to that, Danielle. I don't know what the fight is.
Well, so I mean, the goal is that a fake fight is something that you can argue about passionately with a friend or a colleague or whoever. And because it's something that you can feel passionate about, that can release a lot of different quote unquote happy brain chemicals. This is a term I've borrowed from Dr. Loretta Bruning. But having those types of interactions can help you reduce your stress. It can help you if you're at fatigue level two, because it's this fun little banter that you have. It can release dopamine because you're connecting with somebody. It can release a bunch of different happy brain chemicals just because of that connection itself. So that might work for fatigue level two, but maybe not when you're like zombie level fatigue level five.
Oh, right. Zombie level, that becomes like, oh, so 6 months ago when I said tomato, you were upset with me. Becomes that argument at level four, I'm sure.
Exactly. I mean, and honestly, that's what workplaces can do. If they have a system like, okay, if I know my employees at fatigue level three, we need to have some kind of system where they can tell somebody and be like, you know, I need a minute. I just need 5 minutes outside to collect myself. And there should be no punishment. There should be no like pay withdrawal, or, you know, there should be no punishment for somebody admitting that they are struggling, either physically because they're exhausted or mentally because they're like stressed out or, you know, going through some PTSD or something. There should be a system where you can tell somebody what level you're at. And that way, if you're able to have somebody confess they're at fatigue level three or fatigue level four, you have an opportunity to do something about it before they reach fatigue level five. At fatigue level five, you're so mentally overwhelmed. You're paralyzed. You're paralyzed with stress. Or you're just so sleep deprived that you can't even function. Your eyes might be open, but nobody is home. So you have to identify those levels of fatigue before you get to that point, because at that point it's too late.
Right. Well, and I've heard you say a few things that get talked about in every topic, in every industry, and they're principles that they are, to me, they're just a baseline of everything. Is you can't manage what you don't measure. Yes. And that you said was step one. And you hear that everywhere. You've got to measure it. You've got to document it. You've got to write it down to find the patterns and see what works. Now, I'm a huge proponent of journaling. And you know, whether that's your nutrition, because you've got health and fitness or, you know, strength or weight loss goals, whether that's your emotional intelligence and recognizing where your triggers are and which environments are healthy or not so healthy for you. But this is a whole new element that overlays all of that to say, not just am I hangry, but what's my caffeine level and what's my sleep level, and taking those two things and really understanding how they affect you. To me, that's more than powerful. That's like a superpower, because I can say to me, if I can articulate, hey, in the moment, and someone in my net, in my circle can say, hey, this feels, you know, I mean, not to say calm down, right? But this feels a lot, you know, where are you? What level are you? And I feel like there's an element of, if you name things, they have less of this kind of villain characteristic. So I'm at a three. It's just a fact. It's not emotional. It's not a subject. It just, here's where I am. And now what do we do with that information? And I think that's the thing for a leader that would be the coolest about this identification is, where are you? Let's just name it. And once we can name it and say, here's where I am, it's really quick and easy. It sounds like with guidance from your book, Danielle, to say, here's what I know you now need. And so building systems.
Yes.
One of the things that EMS is pretty good about, I think we, you know, there's always room for improvement, but figuring out that peer support, which is one of the things you said as that emotional
energy management.
Energy management was peer support and recognition. And then the two of the four that you spoke to, I think, are the ones that leaders can really dive into, where someone at an agency level, at an organizational level, can positively affect the fatigue and the burnout of the workforce as a general population. Mm-hmm. One was the physical fatigue. And so this, to me, is bringing in wellness programs. It's bringing in, you know, there's a couple people specifically in the industry, in the health and wellness industry, that do yoga for fit responder for responders, or mindfulness training or meditation. And there's online programs and platforms that people can plug into to help people physically be in a different space and manage that physical energy. And then that second one that you said was that emotional space, which is something that we're not terribly comfortable with as an industry, talking about emotions. Even though when you say that word, some people will shut down or cringe or whatever they do. Because emotions are bad, Danielle. Emotions are too much, right? They make us vulnerable. They make us weak, and we don't like them. So identifying that seems like a tool that maybe a lot of agencies didn't already have to say, yeah, we're calling this is emotional. And it's related to sleep and coffee and burnout and fatigue. And those are things we're very comfortable talking about.
Yep, so, exactly.
I saw your coffee mug with your triangle of your levels of fatigue, which is so cute. And I think every firehouse and EMS station needs a couple of those sitting on the table to remind people of the importance and the value of this. But you're doing some neat things in the industry. You've got a speaking engagement coming up. Do you want to share with us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll be speaking at Ops 21, hosted by the Wisconsin EMS Association. That is going to be Saturday, August 21st. And at that conference, I'll be talking about managing administrative fatigue.
Very cool. Keynote, that's exciting space. And obviously this is a topic that is heavy in our industry. And I know a lot of people would love support if they want to continue the conversation with you, or they want to purchase a handful of your books for their employees. How do they reach out to you to continue the conversation? And where do they go from here if they want to grab your book?
The best way to get a hold of me is either LinkedIn or via email. At email, my address is info@greeneyedguide.com. That's GREENEYEDGUIDE. info@greeneyedguide.com. That's my email address. That is probably the best way to get a hold of me. LinkedIn is probably the second best way, because you have to connect with me and then send me a message. And sometimes I get these random, like, Bob Smith wants to connect with you. I'm like, who's Bob? I don't know. So like, if you do connect with me, please send me a message so I know who you are and why you're talking to me.
Yes. I have to plug that, because on the career coaching side, I tell people you should not send a request. So this is just sidebar related leadership to networking. When you network with someone, to Danielle's point, exactly, there's always value in telling them, how did you hear about them? How did you come across their profile? Why are you interested in connecting with them? Or why might they be interested in connecting with you? So there's very aligned expectations. People are a lot more interested or willing to connect. So if you're listening to our podcast, absolutely shoot Danielle a message. Let her know you heard her on my podcast. Or shoot me a message and I'm happy to connect you. Y'all know I love those warm intros. So that's how they can get a hold of you on LinkedIn, or shoot you an email. Danielle, do you work with agencies? If I'm leading an agency and I have identified this as a challenge, but I'm not sure the right path, do you ever work with agencies to kind of help write that plan for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I've worked in the past with a few different EMS and fire houses in Wisconsin. So I'm always happy to connect and chat and share what I can do, or, you know, connect you with somebody that can help you if I cannot.
Perfect. So I want to leave our audience with one final tidbit. So there's a lot we've talked about. We've talked about personal stimulation, and how caffeine affects the body sensitivities. We've talked about, you've given us three, you've given us a lot of information from your book. So I'm going to have to recap it in the notes, y'all. But this has been so helpful and so good. I'm so grateful to have you on, Danielle, and glad that we got connected. But if you had to leave our audience with one final tidbit, one takeaway about burnout, caffeine, fatigue, and how we manage it, what is that message?
The number one message I want to leave your audience with is, as you go throughout your day today, and as you go throughout the rest of your week, just take a split second to check in on yourself throughout the day. What level of fatigue am I at? And you don't even have to know my scale. Just on a scale from 0, like amazing, I feel perfect, to 5, like I am a walking zombie. Where are you at? And then keeping track of that throughout the day, even if you've done nothing about it, just knowing what level you're at can help you, because then you can make data-driven decisions about improving your day, improving your week, whatever. So just check in on yourself. What level of fatigue are you at? And just keep track of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, she is a scientist. Your data-driven decisions. Say that 3 times fast.
Right.
So self-awareness. Yes. Physical, emotional, spiritual, all the emotional management, energy management. Mm-hmm. Where are you? How are you feeling? Check in with yourself, mm-hmm. and then make a plan. I love it. That's pretty consistent with all the cooking that I do. So it's really neat to hear. It's really great to have you, Danielle. Thank you so much for joining us today, and excited to see you at a conference near me soon.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you for making the choice to show up today. Sometimes showing up is the hardest part. Emergent leadership is a verb and it takes a community of support. So to be part of the discussion, use hashtag emergent leadership or feel free to tag me or my guest on any of your social platforms. Check out the show notes in the comments below for the resources mentioned on today's episode. And I look forward to you joining me again next week as we continue the conversation with yet another incredible emergent leader. No matter where you are in your leadership journey, this is just the beginning.